This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Way of the Clan, 4, by Dem Mihailov, narrated by Eric Martin. Chapter 1. Mages Guild, The Global Quake. Tomorrow will be war. The soft teleportation flash brought me right to the main street of Algora at dusk. Around me was a smooth rush of unhurried citizens and players. Among them one could notice running figures, but very rarely, due to the city guard running through the main streets and city parks at night, was limited so as not to unnerve the residents and visitors of Algora, deciding to take an evening stroll through the promenade. Slowly stepping to the side of the street, I perched by one of the nearby tables, smattered with colorful posters. I briefly paused and looked around me at the drastically changed atmosphere. Coming from a crude dungeon straight into the bustling and lovely street at night, anyone would have fallen into a daze. And so I took my time looking around in awe, having much to witness, and many people. There was an iridescent play of light emitted from seemingly tiny and trembling street lamps in colored glass lamps. The illumination itself was bright enough and lit up the whole street, giving it an extraordinary coziness. Leaning against some of the lampposts were some narrow ladders. A large army of lamplighters, grumbling good-naturedly, inspected the lamps and added to them a special enchanted oil. All these details gave Valdira a special realism, lamplighters refueling lamps, superintendents waving brooms, and nagging housewives hanging clothes and linens on the drying lines, clothes which, in fact, could easily be stolen. Everything was true to life, not an imitation, but a separate reality, even if it was only digital. The buds of many nightly plants flowered. In the daytime they looked like normal greenery. Only at night did they reveal their true splendor, huge white and periwinkle flowers with a distinct pale glow. Over these buds swarmed myriads of tiny fireflies and other glowing insects, glowing with all the colors of the rainbow. Also visible were slightly larger clumps of light, swarming from flower to flower. If you looked more attentively, it was possible to discern a tiny nocturnal hummingbird or flower fairy, having awakened at dusk and eager to collect sweet nectar and catch small insects, perhaps having no idea that they themselves are part of the Algora's nightly aesthetic. Under this rich variety of colors were scattered here and there a bunch of cozy benches, made from a variety of materials of various colors, shapes, and sizes, but all in all looking extremely convenient. Some were massive and short and made mostly of stone, as though created specifically for the dwarves. Others, made of many wild and interlacing plant shoots, as well as other various greenery, ideal for elves. Even acolotes would not have trouble finding themselves a suitable bench. Somewhere among the lawns, near the benches, there were a few small round pools with crystal-clear waters, which allowed the acolotes to see the others. They could even interact, occasionally sticking their heads out of the water. The way out of these aquariums led straight to an underground channel, which connected to any external body of water outside the city. Everything was provided. All was taken into account. On the benches were many couples admiring the surrounding splendor and the starry sky, which was no less magnificent. On the small surrounding tables stood vases with fruit, uncorked bottles of wine and champagne, and crystal wine glasses. Somewhere in the distance, a barely audible strumming of a guitar or mandolin, and a quiet female voice, singing brazenly that same immortal song, "Oh, the delightful evenings in Valdira! Let it be all a dream, and love be but a game, but let my wishes and embraces find you." Players sauntered through the streets, done up in their best suits and dresses. As for the variety of apparel, of course the women were in the lead as usual. There were lush skirts with numerous pleats and ruffles, tight corsets, elegant hairstyles and half-masks on their faces, fans in their fingers, and languid smiles upon thin-parted lips. There was a huge variety of colors, styles, and eras. I heard the clatter of heels on stone tiles. Women are always women, even if only in this ephemeral digital world. The men were trying in vain to keep up. Jackets were embroidered with gold and silver. There were coats, Persian robes, sleeveless jackets, wide trousers, breeches, stockings, and boots. One could not count it all. And many of the men wore elaborate masks, a la Zorro. As a consequence, over the heads of each of these players, there was no mention of level or clan, only the inscription Mr. Incognito, or Lady Mystery, and other inscriptions of the same kind. This was the feature of the masks. In certain central areas of the city, only at night, they allowed one to hide their information and become, temporarily, a mysterious stranger. This was convenient, especially if one was a famous fighter, or the winner of a tournament, the head of a famous clan, or distinguished in something which brought him universal fame or popularity in the world of Valdira. Or hatred, if you were the head of an Agar clan, for example. How would one expect to walk through the streets of Algora with a lady on your arm if insults rained down on you from all sides? Even the worst thief, accustomed to the highest infamy, would not like it. Masquerade masks solve this problem perfectly. Of course, so long as you do not forget to remove your conspicuous mithril armor beforehand, otherwise the disguise is good for nothing. However, the magic does not have any effect on the city guard. Mask or not, they are able to see perfectly all the information they need, but they will not tell anyone. Overall, a mask in the evening streets of Algora is the most reliable tool for getting rid of pesky gawkers, beggars, or other vengeful characters. For a baroness, a mask is of the most vital necessity, otherwise no one would leave her alone. And for me too, I suppose. With all these adventures, I had almost forgotten quite how famous I had become in Valdira, and how many already knew my nickname. It was on everyone's lips. As soon as anyone shouts, Rosgard, all those who hear will be sure to respond, even if it's just a lazy look over the shoulder. Some would even hurry to get to know me. And I did not want this at all. Abruptly ceasing my admiration of my beauteous surroundings, I was assured that my modest persona had not yet attracted any special attention, and so I darted to the left, where an old local was perched over a small, neat counter. It was a plain wooden box on high legs, with a mirror mounted in a silver frame standing atop it facing the buyer. There was an array of goods, unpretentious masquerade masks, for absurd prices. There was a bent handle attached to the side of the box, from which a barely audible melody rang out. Looks like the stand was also an instrument. Looking at me with expressionless eyes, the old man pursed his lips, and, without saying a word, gestured towards his goods. Choose, as they say, whatever your heart desires. I can sure choose, that's no problem, but money is tight. In fact, I have no money at all, only items and goods. Maroon ragged cloaks, for example, singed and ready for trading. "Good evening," I began joyfully, squeezing out this joy with difficulty through a sudden overpowering fatigue.
"Good indeed," the salesman answered, nodding shortly. "Choose, young lad. The items are temporary, but useful and fun. I've got simple cloth masks, ones decorated with mother-of-pearl. There are ones trimmed with beads, multicolored feathers, all of them unique, all for good prices. No loss for you, and at least a little bit of gain for me."
"I'll have a simple cloth mask," I answered quickly. "Black. But here's the trouble, I don't have a penny."
"Not a penny. Then I guess you gotta leave," said the old man, his eyes flashing. Looks like I'd amused him.
"Well, you see, I'd like to, but without a mask I can't," I confessed, spreading my arms and looking nervously around.
"So, you're a thief," suggested the old man, clearly livening after each of my anecdotes.
"More of a tyrant," I chuckled. "Be a good man. Give me the mask for now, and in an hour, well, maybe a little later, I'll return and repay the debt to the dime."
"Smooth talker," sighed the seller. "Looks like you're a crook. You talk the talk and twirl others around your finger skillfully."
"That kind of sin is not my style," I disagreed. "I am a simple citizen."
"Then a lover boy, stealing the hearts of married girls and then running away from their husbands, fearing the wrath of Hades?"
"Nope, I didn't anger Hades. I confused no hearts and saw no ladies," I mused. "Gramps, listen. Let me have the mask, hmm? I swear, I'll bring it all back."
"Here," the old man laughed maliciously, handing me a mask. "What a poet, in a mask and boots."
"I ain't a poet. Oh, thanks for reminding me about the boots, Gramps. And how much do I owe for the mask?"
"Free," waved the old man. "You're amusing. You make an old man laugh. Just don't forget to look in the mirror."
"Uh-huh," I nodded, pressing the patch of black cloth to my eyes. Looking into the mirror through the narrow slits in the mask, I saw the inscription above my reflection slowly disappear. Next went all of my stats, and there was a prompt in front of me asking me to select a temporary name and to say it aloud. "Talentless poet," I pronounced, an homage to the results of the recent exchange with the seller. "Temporary name approved. Validity 45959, the system replied after a short hesitation, endorsing the name chosen. Well, I have 5 hours of time, and that's quite enough. The old man chuckled again and silently handed me the black hat with a wide brim.
"Again you amused me," he explained. "It's not often that happens."
Pulling on the hat, I bowed awkwardly to the seller and walked away to the sound of his chortling, feeling like a recently baptized Zorro, only not nearly as charming. And I had no sword, no trusty steed. In Valdira, however, I was more wanted than Zorro, by everyone at once, from individuals to entire clans. All that remained was to come up with a personal mark and leave it in places to be found, something like, "Ross was here." Damn. Pausing for a moment, I took off my conspicuous boots and placed them into my bag. I carefully patted myself down, shaking off layers of dried mud and scraps of seaweed. Well then, now my appearance level had increased to an acceptable level. But it still corresponded to my temporary name, Talentless Poet. The half-starved and impoverished poet shuffles down the colorful streets of Algora at night. I could have even started reciting poems stuck together on the fly, but I do not have enough courage for such feats. Beside, this action would be the equivalent to dumping a slew of verbal assaults upon my own head. In addition, it is not a fact that people would fall for this crude image. Many well-known players live to play pretend and assume a poor image on the streets. Rags are not proof of poverty. Previously, only kings behaved in this way. Now it was whoever felt like it. Anyway, why add to the hassle? There are thousands of people like this already on the streets. All is as it should be. A crackling shot like a machine gun fire sparked and glittered in front of me. I jumped involuntarily startled, before realizing that one of the players had thrown exploding firecrackers. The blasts went off, and the player immediately ran. The guards would chase you for this, but lazily, in good fun. They shake their fist at the humorist and let him run. There is no harm done other than the noise, and there is fun galore, especially when a firecracker explodes directly under your feet. I chuckled and continued on with my unhurried pace, trying to keep my walk steady. Oh, walking in my direction was an interesting couple. So interesting that many people turned around and looked after them. Above their heads shone nicknames which were no less entertaining, Plague Doctor and Robot Werther. One in a sparkling silver jumpsuit with a high neck and a stiff facial expression, long straight hair, walking with a strange shuffling. The other player wore a long black cloak and, on his face, a mask with a giant bird beak, the eyes glowing with a dark and sinister green. Despite his dismal attire, heavy step, and sinister mask, the second player enjoyed much less popularity than his teammate. This could be clearly deduced from the number of likes dotting the chest of the silver jumpsuit of the robot. 3 dozen or more, it seemed, judging by the shining diamond-like spots. The plague doctor in a black cloak had no more than 5. Each player, over the course of the masquerade, is allowed to throw a like one time at another character whose costume and attire they like best. One must simply touch the player with your hand and say, like. Characters with the highest number of likes receive a prize from the administration. Often it is very valuable. For some reason, Robot Werther enjoyed a whole lot of popularity, despite his defenseless, old-fashioned appearance. I'm going to have to do a little digging on the internet and find out who the player is portraying. Maybe a new movie came out or something. Overall, the people are rejoicing. Some players continue their adventures, while others happily saunter through Algora. All depends on the player's character. Whatever is more to their liking, monsters falling at their feet, defeated, or the luxury of the evening promenade. I can only imagine what is going on in Plosafont. There, even the daytime isn't boring. But now, life is beating like an oil well. Rumor has it that, specifically in the evenings, famous fashion designers, directors, and many well-to-do others visit Plosafont. I don't know how close to the truth these rumors are, but the residents of the square certainly always try to outdo themselves. It was just the riot of colors I needed. So, I marched to the gates of the Mages Guild, accompanied by many colorfully dressed players and locals, also looking for their chance to make an appearance. Against this backdrop, I appeared to be a barn mouse. Now there are friendships beginning, love affairs being established. Clowns, jesters, and fools, so many that you couldn't count. Above the street hang a few wires, and upon them dance a few leaping gymnasts, spinning in somersaults and doing unimaginable tricks. Especially notable was the figure of a girl in a fancy silver mask and matching bikini. One couldn't tear away the eye. She was the embodiment of grace and beauty. It was clear that a lot of time and effort had been given to create this external appearance. A decent audience gathered, spellbound, watching the performance. But I shuddered to think of the cost of such a performance. Surely it would take many experience points to mock the laws of physics like that, and a pretty penny. "Take it!" A little boy thrust a colorful flyer into my hand, and then again disappeared into the crowd, not having asked for a dime. Looking at the paper, I laughed. It was advertising. "Don't miss it! The main event of the evening! The Grand Opera of Valdira presents theatrical performance of Arrival in Zargrad! With incredible scenery, costume design, special effects, and vocals, in the role of the Navigator, the famous tenor Luigi Galvari, involving more than 300 actors and singers." Way to spoil my mood. I could just imagine myself at the hull of the flagship, stretching my arms forward and belting out, "Figaro, Figaro, Zargrad!" And the sailors sing along, "Ahoy, ahoy, on the horizon!" And in the back of the boat, sitting by the oars, the Black Baroness cheerfully sings, "Do not leave me this way, I can't survive, can't stay alive!" My imagination was getting away with me. The fantasy had sure unfolded. Stifling my laughter, I threw the hand out into a nearby colored box, the inside of which happily stirred and growled. It was the garbage creature nesting there, hungry for its dinner. I hope the paper was to his liking. These creatures, however, ate just about anything. Soon I was standing at the familiar gates of the Mages Guild. The gates were thrown open hospitably, which was to be expected. The guild was used to working around the clock. There are players in Valdira not only in the daytime, after all, and they might choose to update their skills at the most unexpected times. But the higher-ranking magicians must already be in their cribs. The locals are also asleep. How else could thieves sneak into their houses on tiptoe under the veil of darkness, on the creaky floorboards, afraid of waking up the owners? I very much hope that killing the famous werewolf should cheer up an old magician enough that he is encouraged to get out of his warm bed and make his way to me, and that he gets excited enough that he forgets to even think about sleep. I really wanted to sell my items, along with the werewolf's chopped-off head, and to receive the reward. My expectations did not deceive me. I was greeted right at the gate. As soon as I stepped inside, a teen standing at the fence in a long robe and a ridiculously high hood screamed something unintelligible and rushed headlong through the door of the Mages Guild. He stumbled as he ran, holding his funny cap with both hands. That was no accidental yelp. I froze for a moment, trying to assess the situation and to decide what to do, to walk on inside, or to turn against fate and walk away. The question was decided for me.
"Rosgard!"
An authoritative voice echoed across the park and practically rooted me to place.
"Welcome, hero."
Oh, a good start. One can even say very promising. Broadening my chest, I smiled widely to the arch-wizard Tarnius, who was standing on the steps. Majestic, a real-life Gandalf. I walked up to the Archmage and greeted him.
"Good evening to you, great Archmage. I come with glad tidings."
"You brave soul,"
interrupted the old wizard with disbelief in his eyes.
"Desperate daredevil?"
"Are you talking about the werewolf?" I said.
"I'm talking about the gods," grumbled the Archmage.
"And you are obviously not too afraid to offend them. Not everyone is capable of it. Not everyone dares."
"Right," I said, putting a stop to the speech of the Archmage, which was gradually growing more offensive to me. "Could you be a little more specific about the angry gods? And by the way, I killed Grimm. I got his head."
"Uh-huh,"
nodded Tarnius, beckoning me with his hand.
"Let's go, hero. A great reward is awaiting you. After death... All in good time, I suppose."
Was I hearing things, or was the Archmage about to say, "after death"? Passing several intricate corridors, we arrived at the office, with which I was already familiar. I plopped down on my favorite chair, my tired legs outstretched. A thought flashes through my lazy mind. They could have shown me other rooms, but it was only this same one, after all, even though it is richly decorated. But I was getting ahead of myself. Many players only dream of getting into similar rooms in the Mages Guild, and I was already asking for variety.
"Ahem."
Tarnius cleared his throat, and I hurriedly jumped up, rummaged in my bag, and pulled out a giant wolf's head frozen in a fierce post-mortem grin. The Archmage pointed to a low table, and I dutifully lowered the werewolf's head in the middle of an empty silver plate on the countertop, which seemed to be designed precisely for that purpose, although now I was certain of it. It was a dish that was specially prepared. On it were several other strange hands and levers, obviously not a platter for pies. Probably they were afraid the werewolf would sprout a new body, God forbid. One was quite enough. My mind would not survive another encounter with a monstrous wolf, let alone a mortal body. Tarnius, with some reverence, looked into the dead eyes of the werewolf, ran his hand over his well-groomed beard, and took a deep breath.
"A great thing you have done, Rosgard. Great."
"Congratulations. The quest, Scowl of Grimm the Inconsolable, is completed. Reward, 500 gold coins. Congratulations. +2 goodwill to the relationship with Mages Guild of Algora." Goodwill? Not bad, especially in such a powerful faction as the Algora Mages Guild. 500 golden coins? Generally excellent. And where is my any item of the Sapphire Vault? My personal hamster, long undisturbed, was instantly awake and slipped from its hospital bed, grinning fiercely, ready to squeal. My personal toad peeked out from another room and strongly supported the hamster in his endeavor. But seriously, where is the object?
"Do you remember?"
said the Archmage with a slight smile, having noticed, no doubt, the pensive expression which appeared on my face.
"Brass in the hand is more valuable than the sapphire that's promised. You got the brass. So forget about the sapphire, Rosgard. You made your choice, and what's more, received half of your reward even before you killed the werewolf. Am I right? Is that fair?"
Almost, I said, gnashing my teeth. Almost. No, all was correct. The fortune-teller had told me where to find one of the parts of the Silver Legend, and I got most of this for free, that is true. But the toad was strangling, terribly choked. It's a shame, damn it. But surely I couldn't grip the magician by his beard. Certainly that action would not be understood. And secondly, I'd burn to ashes before I could reach him.
"Nearly?"
Tarnius raised his eyebrow, slightly perplexed.
"Surely you don't think—"
"All is fair." I put up my palms. "I was just hoping that you might be able to answer a few questions. I would be extremely grateful."
"If I can,"
nodded the old wizard after a brief hesitation, making a soft gesture. A soft flash and a heavy purse fell into my lap, not a cheap one, judging by the fine embroidery.
"Gold,"
explained the Archmage needlessly.
"What questions have you, Rosgard? If I can, I will answer. I do not mind a conversation with someone who has committed such a good deed."
"About the wrath of the gods, please," I blurted out. Technically, I already understood. The rescued girl in the marsh, the fiery cobra, and the breakthrough of divine magic. But I really wanted details, even those which were unpleasant and terrible. It is better to know than to guess. Archmage Tarnius did not disappoint.
"Wise choice. Well, you angered the goddess, Rosgard, and the gods are extremely unforgiving. If it were their choosing, you'd have already been burnt to ashes."
"Huh.
Remember, nothing in this world is without consequences. Saving one, you're killing another," said the Archmage, waxing philosophical. "Pulling one out of the fire, you throw another into hell. That is life. That is the law."
"I saved a girl from the fire," I nodded. "The fire which I started. I don't kill children."
"And this is very commendable,"
the old magician didn't argue, rubbing his eyes with his hand.
"Life is precious. The life of a child is priceless. But this truth does not affect the laws of the world. You received special assignment, Rosgard. The task was utterly simple. The only difficulty, to tear off the leeches afterwards, to keep the tinder dry, and be able to strike fire and burn the rotten hut with the chosen one inside."
I noted this new development in my mind, and continued to listen to the reflections of the Archmage Tarnius, who had paused for a moment to take a sip out of the goblet he had created out of thin air. He sent one into my hands as well, and continued.
"Furthermore, for such a simple task, you received a help. You were given a hint, which even a child would have been able to figure out. You must already understand, Rosgard, that the hint you received was given to you by no ordinary fortune-teller, unable to see any further than her own nose. You must remember who was sitting in that shabby tent, whose will you agreed to fulfill."
"I think I can guess. But there were no rules. I didn't agree. And even if there was a will, then I certainly obeyed it. I burned the hut. What else?"
"What else? Why'd you have to go poking your nose where it didn't belong?"
rumbled the magician in a loud bass, and I involuntarily cringed.
"Make the fire and go on your way. That was the task. And such a promising young magician. Lucky, skilled."
"Don't give up too soon on me, please," I said, shivering again. "It's like you've condemned me to death already."
"You've successfully condemned yourself already,"
snorted Tarnius, sipping his wine tastefully.
"But you have served the goodwill of the Mages Guild and the common people when you slayed the werewolf. And so I will play to your favor, and tell you how to get rid of the wrath of the goddess you deceived.
Excuse me? I piped up. I didn't cheat any goddess. It's a... I beg you, continue, dear Tarnius.
You're brazen, sighed the archmage. In my youth I was the same.
Yeah, right, I nearly blurted. There wasn't a Valdira then. Lucky that I was able to keep my mouth shut. I do not think the great magician would be glad to hear the news that he had never been young. That would certainly be the point at which our conversation ended.
Like it or not, you angered the goddess, and that's why now you listen silently and respectfully,
chided Tarnius, and I nodded meekly.
The easiest, most bloodless, and most painless road? Just give up the child you saved to the temple of the great goddess Snesse, and this will all be over. The child will grow up, and she will become a great priestess of Snesse.
Really? That great? I didn't believe it. The high priest or priestess, this was the highest person in the temple, the first after God, something like the Pope.
For such a child, the perfect occupation, her fate as straight as an arrow, and rising invariably as the sun, spoke the archmage. Do this, give the child to the temple of Snesse, and believe me, the goddess will replace her anger with mercy, and shall not leave you unrewarded, and the reward will be so great that not everyone can even imagine it.
And if I do not give her in to Snesse's temple?
Who knows? The magician shrugged. We are only human, only pawns in the games of the gods.
Who in the world is she, then, this girl? I couldn't resist, and asked plainly.
I already answered you, Rosgard. At the very least, the high priestess in one of the churches of this world, this would be the lowest step for this child.
And this the very least? But there's nowhere to go beyond that, I stammered.
The gods are immortal, Tarnius pronounced quietly. It's true. But immortality is not a divine right to the heavenly throne, Rosgard. It's only eternal life, which may occur in the warm light of faith and worship, or in the cold oblivion of Tantarial. And if Snesse falls, it will be all the way to the bottom, into the dark depths where sun never reaches. Thus fell Gravital, and so many other fallen gods. Tell me, Rosgard, would you like to live in hell forever?
Probably not, dear Tarnius. Neither alive nor dead.
That's precisely what the great goddess Snesse also doesn't want, summed up the archmage. I can see a lot, many things. Listen, Rosgard, what I tell you now is not a great mystery, and is already been known to many. Soon a great war will come. Not today, not tomorrow, but the war will begin. And when it happens, the world will turn. Many of the old gods will fall. New gods will take their place. This is meant to be. It was predicted by the great oracle, who never left the dwelling of his crystal palaces. The great oracle himself, who sees the fates of even the immortal gods. It was he who brought the news to the world that several children had been sent, 3 boys and 2 girls. Now their fate is obscure. No one knows what they will become. The oracle only saw fragments. But this is not important. Maybe the oracle didn't discern the fates of the children sent from heaven, but he clearly discerned the fates of the gods ruling now. And he saw 5 huge fiery meteors fall from the divine Olympus, and leaving black trails of smoke, stones rushing to the ground. And he heard the howling of the fallen gods, and the bloody tears flowing down their cheeks, and heard the creak of the gates leading into the abyss of Tantarial.
Fuck, I blurted out, and, recollecting myself, rephrased, oh, the great gods, what sad news. My heart trembles with terror.
Exactly right. In one of those fiery meteorites, the oracle made out the image of the goddess Snesse. Now you understand, Rosgard?
Now I understand. Death was predicted unto the goddess Snesse, and she decided to get rid of a potential rival by burning an innocent child alive, or rather her two competitors, because there were two girls. Isn't that right, Archmage Tarnius?
Your words are plain and dirty, and in no way reflect the grandeur and scale of the event, the mage grimaced. But yes, you're right. The Oracle didn't just predict death. The gods are immortal. The Oracle predicted their fall into oblivion. Only another goddess can replace a fallen goddess, never a god. And the goddess cannot kill any one of these girls. They are the chosen. They are immortal. And most importantly, they cannot be sent to the hellhole of Tantariel, for there is no sin in them. Newborns are always blameless and pure. They have no karma, nor do they have the madness inherent in the fallen gods.
Then why? I did not understand. Why bother to burn the house? What did you say it was, her cradle?
In order to delay her arrival, said the Archmage, destroy the cradle before the Chosen establishes her first contact with a mortal, and to delay the inevitable.
Got it, I drawled. To destroy the rocket launcher before the rocket can take off. But still, it's only a postponement, only for a short while.
For a time, yes. A time in which the gods can build up their power, to increase the number of believers, rebuild new churches, to do everything possible to prepare for war. Relentless war. A war of survival. This isn't just a battle between gods high in the heavens invisible to mortals. First and foremost, it is a war between believers, between the churches, old and new. Armies of thousands will converge in a fierce battle. This is what awaits our world, Rosgard, the coming of the Great War. But not now, thank the gods. There is still time. The Chosen grow quickly, but not in an instant. Again, if you want peace for yourself and the rest of the world, send the child to grow up in Snesse's temple.
What's the difference? If her destiny is to become a goddess...
There are lots of goddesses, Rosgard. If Snesse herself brings up the child, she will herself direct the child's blow. Not against herself, against other goddesses. The child would not hit her own mother, would she?
Now I understand everything, I nodded. If you can't kill her, make her part of your family and administer the blow yourself, wisely. Another goddess will fall, and the daughter of Snesse will take her place. How clever!
You're smart, the Archmage praised. Your mind is fast and tenacious. Decide for yourself, Rosgard. I only gave you advice. It is your choice now, whether to avert the wrath of the goddess. Now she is waiting, waiting for your next move. Give the child up to the temple. You will be forgiven and rewarded. Do otherwise, and who knows what will happen to the thread of your destiny.
She'll curse me? I asked, remembering fearfully those unfortunate players upon whom hung wildly powerful divine curses. You wouldn't wish them on an enemy.
She cannot.
The Archmage shook his head.
Do you still not understand? If Snesse could kill you, or at least curse you, she would have done it instantly. Right now, before my eyes, you'd be covered with terrible scabs and sores. Your hair would have fallen off in clumps. Your body would be curled, and your eyes...
Stop, 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 enough, please. Why can't she do it?
Because you're connected by a blood bond with the Chosen,
he replied, and smiled softly.
You are under her protection. None of the current ruling gods will be able to curse you, wither you, sink you, break you, boil you alive.
Stop, stop, stop! Enough scaring me, dear Tarnius. I'm already scared enough. I saved a damn child. I feel like I've pulled Hitler from under the wheels of a truck. War, armies, gods falling from the sky.
It's inevitable. A truck? Hitler? What's that?
Right, doesn't matter, I shrugged. So, then I don't have to worry? No matter what I do, the goddess will not be able to punish me?
Herself? No. But She has a lot of true believers, powerful wizards, warriors, priests, and she needs only to point a divine finger to the object which caused her wrath.
God damn it! I expressed all of my emotions in a word. Right. Those players which had chosen a god to worship would happily shred and burn me upon request, if only to receive the favor of their deity.
"Think about it, and decide for yourself,"
summarized the Archmage briefly.
"This is your destiny. Here our conversation concludes, Rosgard."
Yeah. Oh, dear Archmage Tarnius, do you not still have any orders for me? I'll perform them, joyfully.
"Orders for you?"
asked the Archmage, and laughed shortly.
"No, and there will be none, at least for now."
"Why? What have I done wrong?"
"Because it's not for us, ordinary mortals, to meddle against the will of gods," said Tarnius dully. "And it's not for me to make deals with those who have, even if casually, angered the goddess. I'm not one of those brave souls who yearn to look out the window and see a red-hot meteor sent by the offended Snesse, and therefore I will not be charging you with anything. I won't even ask you to shut the door on your way out. I'll get up myself and close it myself."
"All the same, one will fall. Well, not a meteor, but a goddess," I blurted.
"She may fall, or maybe not," replied the Archmage. "But still she is a great goddess now, one who can, in a careless flick of a finger, turn me and anyone else in this building into a slug. Until you deal with your fate, Rosgard, you will not have any assignments. But you may still learn new spells and skills with ease. All are equal in this regard, both the faithful and those who do not care about the gods. Goodbye, Rosgard."
The Archmage waved his hand, and I was enveloped in a misty cloud, and when it vanished, I was at the gates again. On the pavement lay the heavy purse of gold, which had before been laying in my lap. Despite my dumbfounded condition, I picked up the gold, nevertheless. Maybe my fate was sealed after all, as the mage had said, but I was not going to turn into an ascetic who despises worldly things because of it. Better to die vulgar and rich than as a poor urchin. I had figured out the main things, as any good veteran of Valdira, having seen all kinds of things during their time in Valdira. Nothing strange, just the immortals having decided to arrange another quake, or as one may say, cataclysm, only this time all much bigger and more grand, quite a different scale. What is a quake? In short, a huge negative event. Always great, and always negative. More often it has to do with a sudden event in nature, which is why such an event is called a cataclysm. I personally witnessed at least a dozen similar quakes. A burning jungle in the south of the continent, a huge tsunami hitting the west coast, a volcano suddenly awakened, spewing huge amounts of lava, huge amounts of locusts devouring crops, earthquakes of the islands of scarlet coral, an unexpected rebellion against the king. All these events are losses, as to players, as to locals. As a rule, the players suffer much less than the locals. All of these, at least the major events, have unpleasant consequences. Destroyed houses, as well as whole cities, villages disappearing, changing landscapes, trade routes, and dramatic lifting or falling of prices. As say the gurus of Valdira, this is how the global economy of Valdira is regulated. The price for rare pink pearls has risen too high, and only acolytes who can retrieve them from the depths are getting richer in front of everyone's eyes. No problem. Whack! Earthquake. And a huge portion of the ocean floor is raised to the surface, along with all its wealth and thousands of precious shells with pink pearls. The market is crowded with pearls, instantly falling in price. And why such an accumulation of shells with pearls there in the first place? Who knows? They liked it there.
The Acolotes howl, flare their gills, and try to sell their unwanted stocks of the once-rare pink pearls, which instantly become cheaper than conventional beads. The azure wood from the rainy jungle is too cheap? No problem. Whack! A huge fire destroyed not only a huge piece of the jungle, but also all the azure timber and lumberjacks themselves in the process, and wood prices instantly jump up to the heavens. Previously, whole crafts and houses were made from the azure tree, and now there is barely a scrape left, hardly enough for a couple of boards for a tiny box. Too much grain? No problem. Whack! Enter the locusts, and not a blade of grass is left on the fields. Farm owners are tearing off all the hair from their bodies, including players, owners of large grain farms. Too many alchemical potions, scrolls, and equipment on the players? Nowhere to put them? No problem. Whack! And a war breaks out. Not particularly large, but expensive. Players can choose any side. Each side promises lots of bonuses if they become a winner. Due to the incessant fights, scrolls and potions are disappearing, gold flows away into the abyss, and equipment turns to useless junk. But how much fun! What excitement! What a great fight! A collision of clans! What armies for battle! You decide your fate. Alchemists are working very hard, as well as the gunsmiths and armorers, all for the sake of war, all for victory, and fie on the emptying warehouses and storefronts. And there are many such examples, especially for fans of conspiracy theories, who could find an insidious plan in any situation. However, in contrast to the real world, Valdira's deceits actually existed. A quake is a quake. Some become richer, some poorer, and hardly anyone stays the same. This time, it is also her, Her Majesty, the Quake. How powerful are the clans which worship Snesse, or any other god who has been predicted to fall? All of these clans have good bonuses, depending on the god, but in any case they are fat and numerous, and suddenly it is reported your god is about to fall, and you will be left with nothing, and with so much incredible effort put into it to get the favor of the god, if it had taken so much gold, so many quests performed, such enemies destroyed, so many prayers read, temples built, and victims sacrificed too, and what? All for nothing? Wave your happiness goodbye? Grieve and forget? No way. We shall not allow our god to fall. War? Excellent. Let there be war. We'll see whose god falls. You don't have to be the great oracle to predict the development of events. The global war. Not a long one, and yet one which fundamentally changes things. How is it said? He who was no one will become the greatest, and who was the greatest, there awaits a straight road to hell. Damn, I can understand the fundamentals of the coming events, but to cover the entire scope of it, one must be a super analyst. I can say only one thing, a huge mass of money will be spent, millions and millions. If two characters meet to fight, they are already spending at least a dozen scrolls and potions. And let's not forget the cost of repairs for equipment and weapons. If clans are fighting, multiply by 100 or 1,000. If the gods are at war... At least the war will not begin right now. This event is still far in the future. And the information shall spread. They will hear it, ponder it, estimate the pros and cons, and begin to prepare. Treasurers will begin to feverishly figure out the costs. Clan leaders will hold meetings, seek allies in the coming war, and study potential adversaries. And all this against the backdrop of a trip to the lost continent of Zargrod. And I'll buy good wine in the nearest wine shop, and a couple of packages of marshmallows, and go sit at the campfire next to the karst caves. Because right now my brain is paralyzed. Decay will soon begin if I go on like this. Besides, I promised. They are waiting for me. and it's not for me to think about the quake. Instead, I'll have to think about getting a couple of things from the Silver Legend and raising my level to have the desired amount of mana points. Quake or not, this still has some uncertainty. But the campaign towards Zargrad will be inevitable. Even the dates are approved. That is what I have to think about and worry about. And after I successfully find myself on Zargrad, then I could not care less. But first, fire, marshmallows, and the wine of victory. Chuckling, I turned towards the nearest hotel. I would have to drop off some things. I made a step and stopped in surprise, staring at the strange company slowly wandering through Algora. Ahead of me, a broad-paced guard in a highly polished uniform embroidered with a silver badge with an image of the town emblem. Behind him, awkwardly trotted a few players in striped suits, carrying a wheelbarrow, the sort in which one carries cement. But what was in this stretcher wasn't concrete, but a colorful, jelly-like mass. Looking closer, I realized that this was an assembly of slimes, of all colors and sizes, from tiny lumps to the respectable sizes of watermelons. Following the bearers of the cart walked another player in the same striped suit, carrying another couple of slimes in their arms. He paused, leaned over the garbage urn, and looked inside, and, with a sigh, lowered a bright green slime into the wide neck of the urn, and he straightened and hurried after his friends. Behind him, another guard walked slowly, full of self-esteem and zeal. At first, I thought this was another masquerade, and only a couple of seconds later, I understood that what I saw were very real prisoners doing corrective work, and in fact, a crime which was out of the ordinary, because one does not simply dress up players in striped prison uniforms for no reason. What the players were doing was clear to me, seeding slimes into garbage cans. I had passed one of these just recently, one of these living trash receptacles built for processing waste. I wonder, what had these players done? What had angered the town board? Anyway, I had no time for this. Stepping aside, I let the trio pass me slowly and involuntarily heard snippets of their conversation. "The slime ate my sleeve!" bitterly complained the last of the trio, the one which had placed the slime into the urn. Above his head shone the nickname Carhame. "Property damage," said the leading guard nonchalantly. 20 coppers to pay for the damage." "But I'm not guilty." "State-owned property. Pay the 20 coppers at the end of the punishment," replied the guard, leaning on another urn and looking inside. "And there is no slime here. Where did it go? Do they crawl away? Surely someone is stealing, but they are useless. Oh, hey, prisoner, plant a slime here, and get a move on. We still have 2 blocks to go." "Yes, I'm planting, Carhame sighed, putting another swaying clump of translucent jelly into the urn, this time a poisonous yellow. "Then on to the dump," the guard continues, glancing over. "He probably already spawned offspring." "I told you so," sadly drawled another prisoner, with the nickname Sword. "We shouldn't have—" "You don't say a word," hissed the player holding the stretcher. "It's all because of you, anyway." "What do I have to do with it?" protested Sword. "Because, what did I say before the court? We must sincerely repent. We were stupid. It won't happen again. And what did you say?"
"What did I say?"
"Don't you remember, Carhane? Remind us. That one super awesome line, Sword, at which the judge lost the power of speech?"
Picking up a couple of slimes from the stretcher, Carhame rattled.
"We are not criminals. We have contributed to the preservation of rare species virtually exterminated by evil players. It is for this reason that we brought this baby to the most protected place we could find and released it to graze."
"Ugh," growled Varimo in a deep voice. "Contributed, conservation, released to graze. I wish you had kept your mouth shut, Sword. Damn Greenpeace."
"Right," echoed Carhame.
"And you too.
What have I done? Who tried to run away after the verdict? Who rushed to the door?
I was trying to divert the attention so that you could hide.
Oh, sure, only 10 steps in and you ran. And because of this, an extra 5 hours of hard labor for resisting.
I told you so. I said from the start we shouldn't have done it at the beginning.
You work and do not talk, growled the guard. Follow me. Let's go. We still have work and more work.
And where is that one? Where'd he go?
Here, said the last guard, looking over his shoulder.
Hey, hurry up.
Yes, good master,
I heard a shrill and plaintive voice wafting from behind.
I run, I make haste.
The voice seemed very familiar, even too familiar, evoking some not too pleasant memories related to water and fire.
I'm not your master, shouted the guard, but a guardian of the glorious city of Algora. Hurry up. Why are you barely moving your paws?
It's dry,
complained the small voice in the darkness, and a blurred and strangely built shadow appeared.
Feet hurt, hard stone, hands hurt, and no fish.
Shit, I howled, my eyes bulging at the ridiculous figure emerging out of the night.
The bog creature. My old friend. All his damn features I could now recall perfectly. On his thin neck was a thick collar, on his shoulders a great striped prison uniform reaching up to his knee. The expression on his muzzle was very tearful and unhappy, his huge eyes a dark wet spot.
"Don't get involved," grimly advised the last guard, glancing in my direction.
And then again he switched to the bog creature, hobbling on the stone floor. "Hurry, damn thief!"
"Oh, my friend!"
in turn yelled the creature, seeing my humble person.
"Oh, oh, save me! Help me!"
"What, no fish here, too?"
I asked with a sorrowful sigh.
"There are fish,"
the creature shone, and then immediately his ears drooped sadly.
"But you cannot take them."
"Dear sir," I said, turning to the guard, "excuse me, can you please tell me the accusations of this unfortunate creature?"
"And who are you, his friend?"
squinted the guard suspiciously.
"You could say that,"
I opened my arms. "We are acquainted."
"The offender is guilty of stealing and eating fish directly from the market stalls."
The guard told me the sad story of a helpless criminal. "He was captured on the spot, sentenced to 5 days of hard labor."
"Why so many?" I was amazed.
"Freedom for bog creatures!"
The creature hung to my leg.
"Shut up!" hissed the guard, and turned back to me. "Because he ate a dozen fishes before he was caught. 9 large and expensive ones. For this, he was given 2 days of corrective labor."
"And what were the other 3 for?" I asked, looking askance at the bog creature criminal seated at my feet, clutching to my knee and not letting me go.
"As it turns out, before the incident at the market, the offender had committed another crime. He stole a goldfish from an aquarium and ate it alive. The owner of the goldfish was an old woman, and she fainted in the wake of this heinous act. He was sentenced to 2 more days of hard labor for the good of the city. The offender was offered to pay a fine, but he was able to offer as payment only his loincloth, removing it in the courtroom, for which he was sentenced to 1 more day.
The bog creature hiccuped affirmatively and stroked his sunken stomach with his paw.
"Wow!" I shook my head. "Well done, damn exhibitionist, damn it." "Let's go," barked the guard. "Criminal."
"Save me,"
the creature looked at me pleadingly.
"Help me."
"How did you get here anyway?"
"House on fire, smoke, fire, hot, dry, bug creature run. After all, no more fish. I don't know why my house burned. Do you know why my house burned?"
"May I make a payment for it?" I asked through gritted teeth, against greed, greed with a feeling of guilt mixed in. The swamp had burned with my participation,
and had become a branch of hell altogether. "You may," answered the guard. "Tomorrow, in the courtroom, payment 10 gold coins. And what about right now? 10 gold coins and another 3 as a donation to the valiant guards of the great city of Algora?" "It is possible," said the guard after some reflection, offering his hand to me.